Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd of the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I'm your host and master of ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo. Kat is still working busily for Anime St. Louis, so we hope to see her back in the next couple of weeks. But Skyblaze, how are you doing this week?
I have got all the work to do. I have 3 reviews to do before the end of the week.
Ooh.
Why are all the developers releasing everything at the same time? Why you do this to me?
They want to get all the releases in before E3 in a couple months.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You think you're wishing for death now? Wait until June.
I'm really trying very hard not to think about that. Thank you very much.
And Birdman, how are you doing this week?
Well, my hovercraft is full of eels, I have to say.
What you and your wife get up to in your nighttime hours, that's between you two and doesn't need to come onto the show.
Party on. Check out Pornhub. Anyway, I'm doing pretty good this week. Speaking of reviews, I just got Mortal Kombat 11, which you think would be fantastic news. However, there's a story behind this one. Take 3 seconds. So I was supposed to get a review copy, and the company said, no, we don't have any copies. So my wife's like, well, fuck it. I'll buy it for our anniversary in July. Cool. So I get my anniversary present early. Yay. Cool. I get to play Mortal Kombat Premium Edition. Fucking A. Get an email from the PR company. Here's your review code. You motherfucker. You just made me blow $130. But that's okay. It means I have someone else to help me out with the review now. So I'm not doing it all by myself. But still, motherfucker, you couldn't have told me yesterday? I know, first world problem, but hey.
All right.
PR companies, man.
Yep.
Yeah, well, the reason why I've got 3 reviews to do this week is because a PR company for one of the games I'm having to review was like, yeah, we'll send you the code last week. Guess when it arrived?
Today!
Correct.
Who handles their email? DHL?
Buggered if I know. Some idiot.
All right. Well, we got a fun show for you guys tonight. Tonight we're discussing gateway franchises. What are some things that have introduced you to the wider world of geekdom, or that you'd recommend to someone who wants to kind of enter your sphere of nerddom, as it were? But of course, there's procedure to follow. So we're going to begin, as always, with Ask a Geek. And let's see here. Speaking of Mortal Kombat, I got a question here from Charlie, and he asks how excited I am for Mortal Kombat 11, because we did that whole show a couple years ago, me and Brian talking about the anniversary of Mortal Kombat. And the answer is, does it bear shit in the woods? Yes, I'm excited about Mortal Kombat. Are you kidding me? Getting ready to rip spines out with my man Scorpion? I am stoked. So, yeah, and then that was the second question, was who's my main, which is Scorpion. So, you know, because I'm just a stereotypical scrub when it comes to Mortal Kombat and fighting games. We got a question here from Eric, and this one is for you, Mike, but I'm going to open up the Skyblaze as well. And that is, what is the most outrageous thing you've ever seen a player do in a Dungeons & Dragons game? So, Mike, let's start with you on this one.
Oh, let me see. The most outrageous thing I've ever seen someone do in a D&D game. Specifically, this was the total party wipe that happened in the Cambridge Chronicles, which is an offshoot of Terrible Warriors. So we were playing one time, and I had them run an encounter against some high-level orc mercenaries. This should have been a fairly easy encounter. It was just meant to soften them up a little bit, give them a little something before they got to the main bout of the night. So all the orcs rolled insanely well. One of the orcs decided to chop off the limb, the head of one of my PCs, and he got 3 20s in a row.
Can't
argue with the fucking dice gods. So that happened. So he's dead. The other guy fights 3-on-1 against the orc mercenaries, basically gets turned into a pincushion. The other guy decides, I will go run for help, runs into the woods and gets ambushed by the remaining orc mercenaries. And basically a total a total TPK because of the dice gods, and nobody wanted to work together. They all wanted their individual one-on-one battles. It's not epic or something, but it's a situation where teamwork would have easily solved the situation had they been smart and thought it out. It's my first total party wipe I've ever experienced as a game master. I was like, Jesus Christ, you just derailed 40 hours of gameplay that we were recording in one night. In 5 minutes, you've wrecked everything.
All right, and Skyblaze, what's yours? Although I've got a pretty good idea of what story you're going to tell.
If we're talking specifically D&D, there was the incident where I nearly accidentally killed one of the... My character nearly accidentally killed one of the other player characters. Because we were in this city, and to gain favor with the guy who was in charge of the city, he said, if you want to impress me, go into the arena and do an exhibition match. Nobody has to get seriously hurt, just put on a really good show. Okay. So I was playing a bear shifter barbarian, so I could partially turn into a bear when I felt like it. And I was going to be fighting a character called Bran, who was the Nine Swords, I think. So I can't remember exactly what he was. But we were having this fight, and I triple criticaled.
Okay.
And I only meant to, give him a bit of a bruise, and I ended up kind of slicing him from hip to shoulder. I was like, whoops! The party healer comes running in and going, oh my god, what did you do? Trying to put his guts back in.
I said tenderize the meat, not shred it.
I didn't do it on purpose. So this hulking 6.5 foot half bear barbarian was apologizing to this tiny sword guy who was and he was basically kind of holding his guts in, going, you are the hottest woman I have ever seen. okay. Although something that one of my players did to me is not in a D&D game. It was in a game called Kingdom Chaos. I am not going to explain, pester my husband for details. It was my first campaign as a GM instead of a one-off, and I set a giant crystalline spider on them that was filled with lava because I am an asshole. And it jumped down at them from the ceiling, and we were using the Marvel Diceless system, which works on the 10-point scale. This information will be important. So I set this crystalline spider, and it goes raw at the party members, and the guy who was playing the party wizard looks at me and says, is its magical defense plus durability higher than 14? Bearing in mind what I said about 10-point scale, I went, no, that's ridiculous. And he went, it's a house cat.
Okay.
And I went, shit. Although, all right. Bearing in mind that this was my first campaign, there was absolutely sod all I could do about this situation.
Math. It fucks you every time.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay. Well, I don't have a story about of outrageous player achievement. I do have a story of outrageous player failure, though. The one time that I got into D&D style gaming on the regular was for a game called Dark Heresy, which is basically a Warhammer 40K flavored version of D&D. And we started our first campaign. It's our very first session, and the campaign opened with us coming down to the planet in a dropship, and one of our player characters, the Arbitrator, he, which is kind of like, you know, a space cop, he failed his Constitution roll and wound up passing out on the flight down, and every time he rolled to wake up again, he would fail. So we're basically dragging this guy's unconscious body around, And then about 2 hours later, the guy's still unconscious. We're in the middle of a battle, and our psyker basically flubs one of her powers and causes it to rain blood from the sky. And it's at this point that the space cop wakes up, but he's now got to roll a willpower check to, you know, against the weird shit that's going down. He flubs it, rolls on the random effect table, and he passes back out again. So the joke that we had was he woke up, saw that it was raining blood, and said, nope, not dealing with this, and went back to sleep. Okay, and let's see here. Next question here. This one comes from Mary, and I've been called onto the carpet for a comment that I made in our Kingdom Smash episode. She asked why I don't like reading fanfic. And I never said that... And I want to clarify. I've never said I didn't like reading fanfic. In fact, actually, when the three of us we did our My Little Pony show, Last Exit to Ponyville, one of the recurring segments on that show when we did that was actually what was it? Fanfic Spotlight, I think I called it, where I actually did spotlights on different fanfics that I read. So it's not like I'm opposed to the concept of fanfic as a thing. You know, it's just not a big, you know, it's just not a world that I dive very deeply into. And I think I even mentioned in that episode a couple of fanfics that I follow. I don't think any of us here is opposed to fanfic. In fact, one of us actually writes their own.
I've been writing fanfics since I was 16 years old, and I'm now 35, so make of that what you will.
Yeah. I'm not a fanfic guy, really, at all. But then again, I play D&D, so that's fanficky of a kind, so what do you want to say?
Role-playing in general is a kind of fanficky type thing-ish.
Exactly.
I'm not opposed to fanfic. I don't dislike it. It's just, you know... Here's the thing is like I'm very hard to please when it comes to my reading material. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like I'll go through and I'll read something and I'll be like the minute like someone starts acting out of character or something contradicts what's, you know, in canon to whatever game or property this thing is written on, I'm like, nope, I'm out, I'm gone, because I need to have all the pieces of my world fit seamlessly. Because I'm OCD like that. Ooh, here's one for you, Skyblaze. Mm-hmm. This one comes from Paul, and he asks, with Doctor Who filming in Sheffield, have you run into any of the actors?
Not directly. I did see the TARDIS as it was when they were filming, when it was parked outside of Park Hill Flats, which isn't very far from me. It's like a 10-minute walk. Probably less than that, actually. And Tony, I was working at the time, but Tony did manage to go down to Sheffield in the city centre when they had the premiere. So he did get to see some of the actors when they were doing the premiere in Sheffield. But I've not seen any of the actors, no. I could give you a tour of all the filming locations they've done in Sheffield.
So you haven't run into into Jodie Whittaker, like, you know, buying groceries at the local shop?
Well, they don't live here. They just show up for filming.
I mean, I was going to say they need snacks, but then I was like, oh, that's probably catered. So, okay, all right.
Almost certainly.
That's what production assistants are for, man.
You minion, bring me snacks.
All right. But that's all the Ask the Geek questions that we have for this week. Thank you, as always, for sending them in. As always, you can... to us through the email at drgonzo@nerdtothethirdpower.com. We love getting your questions, love reading them on the air, so get those questions in. And with that, we're going to jump right into the meat of this episode. And one of the hardest things that I've discovered in my long years of being a geek is trying to explain to people just, you know, what the hell I'm into and why I'm into it, and basically explaining the crux of my nerddom. And, you know, trying to introduce people to this world that I inhabit, it gets kind of hard to do sometimes, because I think we can all agree that we're into some pretty complicated shit. So, trying to explain, for example, say, the appeal of, say, Dungeons & Dragons or Warhammer 40,000 is not something that you can do succinctly. It requires, you know, a long essay and flow charts and red string and, you know, a complicated PowerPoint presentation. So the question now that I think would be fun to examine is sort of, if you had to introduce somebody to a world of nerddom, what it would be a gateway property that you would do so? What is something that got you into a wider world of nerddom? And what was it about it that made the transition so easy for you? So, Mike, I'm going to start with you, since you have walked all areas of geekdom in your travels. You've seen many different sights and sounds and smells of nerddom. So, what was the thing that got you first into the nerd world?
I'd say one of the earliest things that I started with as my nerddom kind of grew and kind of grew into something else is I was first introduced to Dungeons and Dragons in probably about 1993, and I'd played it a few times and I thought it was okay, but it really wasn't for me because I really wasn't into swords and sorcery and swords and sandals, that sort of thing. So I kind of stopped playing for a while, but a friend of mine found a different game, and it was called Shadowrun. And Shadowrun is a cyberpunk world where basically magic and technology mix. So imagine Lord of the Rings if they had machine guns, computer hacking, and dragons run giant corporations. And that got my attention about the role-playing world. And I was like, wow, this is really friggin' weird. And that led down a rabbit hole of going into the cyberpunk genre of fiction with William Gibson and stuff like that. Johnny Mnemonic was out at the time, the movie. The Matrix would follow a couple years later. And it started my appreciation of the role-playing game genre, because from Shadowrun, I discovered things like Vampire the Masquerade. I discovered Battletech. I discovered the Star Wars role-playing game. I didn't realize there were role-playing games based upon really popular things like Star Wars and Star Trek and whatnot. And it really opened me up to just being more comfortable in my own skin and exploring my creativity. I remember saying for years on Twig, I'm not really a creative person, I'm really not this. But I really have been my entire life. I just never thought of role-playing as that outlet. So when D&D opened my eyes to this new world, realizing there were many subgenres within it, it really made me a better geek all around. So I was tremendously happy to have that experience with my friend Jamie growing up, and then later my friend Ryan. It's never been quite the same since I rolled my first D4 and D6s. So that's pretty much my story there.
Okay. All right. Skyblaze, what about you? What was your gateway into geek culture?
Mostly I blame my grandmother. My nan on my mother's side used to look after me when I wasn't in school, so during the summer holidays and when I'd finish school for the day. She was also kind of ill a lot of the time, so she spent a lot of time sitting in her chair and watching TV. And they were one of the very few people I knew who had cable. It was not common in the UK in the 80s. And she loved sci-fi. And she would watch the original Star Trek and Doctor Who and even fairly obscure things, you know, things like The Tomorrow People, as well as things like Quantum Leap and Knight Rider and slightly more mainstream things. So I was watching things like the original Star Trek when I was 6 years old, and I did see first run on terrestrial TV, Doctor Who, Seventh Doctor. I have very vivid memories of a couple of the episodes of The Curse of Fenric. I have very vivid memories of.
Mostly nightmares, probably.
Yeah, the bit with the hemivores coming out of from the water in the fog, that terrified me for years. But also a lot of the cartoons I watched when I was a kid were very heavily sci-fi themed. Things like Jason the Wheel Warriors, Transformers was very heavily sci-fi. Ulysses 31, which was sci-fi combined with Greek myth.
Which was fucking awesome.
And it was brilliant. Have you heard that the remixed album that this, I think is a Canadian group, actually have done?
I will send
you the link. But a lot of that stuff that I watched when I was a kid was very, very heavily sci-fi themed. So I think that might be partially responsible.
Okay. Well, for me, I would say that my gateway drug was, and I'm pretty sure I've told the story on the show before, but when I was 4 years old, my cousin was living with us, and she was a college student at the time, and she had an original NES and a couple games. And my father, being an educator himself, he didn't believe that, you know, a television and video game system belonged in the room of a college student who should be focusing on her studies. So they put the Nintendo and the television in the children's room, my room, and the rest, as they say, is history. And it's gaming has been such a force in my life that it was also what's introduced me to so many of my other fandoms that I've become a part of. Like, my first exposure to Star Wars was playing Super Star Wars on the Super Nintendo. And, you know, having my mind absolutely blown, I was like, wait, they made a movie based on this video game? Yes, I was an idiot.
That's cute, though.
And it also led to this weird kind of mind-blowing, you know, holy shit, my mom is cool moment. When I was playing it, and she was happened to move through to pass by and look over my shoulder, and was like, "Oh, Star Wars!" I was like, "You know Star Wars?" It's like, "Yeah, I went to see it in the theaters dressed as a Jawa in college," and I was like, "What? my mother who sends me to bed without supper if I watch The Simpsons did something cool? Okay, all right, that blew my mind." Anyway, my first exposure to Star Trek was again through a video game. It was this late 80s thing where you could like move the Enterprise around on like, grid, and you had like a random chance of running into a Klingon battle cruiser and having like a little laser fight with it. I can't remember the name of it, but I remember that was like, you know, that was my first exposure to Star Trek. Which it took me a while to get into Star Trek after that because, you know, my dad loved watching it. And of course, you know, anything our parents love is just the most uncool thing in the world. And it's just, you know, like I said, gaming has just been such a force in my life that it's exposed me to so many different things. And it's kind of hard for me to really imagine how my life would have gone if my parents hadn't decided to put that little gray NES in my bedroom. So I probably would not be the person that I am today, which would probably be a relief to many of the state prosecutors in the area.
Yeah, you'd still be a fucking dork.
Probably.
There's a lot of it about, to be fair. I would like to refer the honorable gentleman to the name of the podcast.
So I guess now the question that I want to put forth is, what makes a good gateway property? What makes a good gateway franchise? What are some elements that it needs to have? So Skyblaze, let's start with you. What to you are the essential properties of a gateway property?
It's a tough one because it kind of depends on the audience that you're pitching it to. I mean, if you're going for the get them when they're young thing, then it has to be simple enough that they're gonna understand it and not get bored by it. But also with enough depth that they can come back to it when they're older and still get enjoyment out of it to kind of foster that lifelong dedication.
Okay. Birdman, what about you?
Something that has to be accessible to anybody, no matter how deep the lore is. And I think a really good example of a good gateway property or a good gateway franchise is, this will probably be somewhat controversial, but I think a game like Skyrim, The Elder Scrolls V. I had never played an Elder Scrolls game before Skyrim, but I went whole hog into that after playing that, and I've read up on the other games. I haven't played anything besides Oblivion, and not very much. I'm really looking forward to The Elder Scrolls 6 when that comes out. But something that allows you to come into the franchise fairly raw, and it spoon feeds you at just a steady enough pace where you'll get interested in it. Another good example of this, just give me a sec to think here. I really did have this thought process thought out. I really did. Fuck it. I'll keep going with my Skyrim example.
Man, you want to talk about Skyrim opening being a gateway into something? As you are well aware, Bergman, because you like just about every post on the subject that I've made on my Facebook, Skyrim is what got me into game modding, and I just went ham on Skyrim. Like,
oh yeah,
you go through my Facebook feed from like 2013 to like 2015. Half of it is just cool shit that. Cool mods that I found for Skyrim, like, you know, holy shit, I found something that turns Skyrim into Hyrule from Twilight Princess. or I'm now beating up dragons with a giant floppy sausage. Well, hello there.
Yeah, I mean, having a franchise that allows you to get into it despite it being X amount of games deep is, I think, a fantastic gateway franchise. Another example of this, and yet another Bethesda game, was Fallout 4. I'd only played Fallout 3 very briefly, and I didn't really like it. But after playing Fallout 4, I've gone back and replayed Fallout 3 and New Vegas. And I'm not a big fan of New Vegas because I only have the console version.
Damn lie, because I remember you contacting me over Facebook, upset because you couldn't get the PC version to work because you wanted
exactly.
to mod it.
So I gave up on it. So I'm like, fuck this. That's why I went back to console. Like, I don't have to worry about shit here. But still, point of the matter is, the fact that Fallout got me invested in that world, so much so I bought every collector's edition, even the goddamn Fallout 76. Fuck you. I've got the Wasteland Warfare edition from Modiphius Gameworks, which is like that miniature war game. I love everything Fallout, and if I hadn't had the accessible experience with Fallout 4, with it introducing the world to me, not throwing me in the deep end, I wouldn't have loved the franchise as much as I do now.
Okay, all right. Talking about gateways into hobbies, when a few years ago, when the Sega Genesis collection was released on Steam, and it had like, I think it's up to like what, like 30, 40 games now, Skyblaze, somewhere around there.
It's pretty big, yeah.
Yeah. I noticed when that came out, suddenly a bunch of people were leaping off that into retro game collecting. And I've actually had some people approach me, after having bought that and played through some of those old school Genesis games, and wondering how they could get into collecting, you know, the actual physical consoles and cartridges. And I'm like, well, you know, a good first step is, you know, look on eBay for some cheap consoles and game lots. You know, you can usually get a lot of maybe about, you know, 10, 20 games for maybe $50 and get a good head start there.
There was a similar thing happened when the NES and SNES minis were released, because it seemed to suddenly like reignite people going like, I remember these, and they wanted to play them again, but didn't want to play the ridiculous prices of the scalpers. So
yeah, and it's happening again, because we got Sega actually putting out themselves for once a Sega Genesis mini, and they're not contracting out to At Games. Which is a rant for another table.
There is a god.
Yeah, so that's a discussion for a different table, because I can go on at length about those. You know, and now I'm getting those questions again. You know, what are some good places to go to collect retro games? Although I kind of wish that they'd finally just fucking bite the bullet and make a Sega Saturn mini, but you know, again, a discussion for a different table. So it's interesting.
Dreamcast
to
mini or GTFO. And I, even though I own a Dreamcast, I'd probably buy one because I'm a complete sucker.
But now, and actually, kind of swinging back around there's actually such things as franchises being gateways to other franchises. I was actually talking with Mike before we started the show. I actually started. I've even though I have the whole series in my collection, I've never actually played a Persona game. Until Persona 5, and even then, the only reason that I finally popped the seal on my copy of Persona 5 was because Joker dropped in Smash last week, and I was messing around with him in his stage and listened to the music and was like, okay, you know, I kind of don't really understand a whole lot about how this character works or what these references are. So I'm going to start playing this this game to, you know, kind of do some research on the subject. And now I've totally fallen in love with the game. Like it might actually get me back into JRPGs full time, because I haven't been this invested in a JRPG. This is now the second JRPG in the space of like 3 months that I've gotten really invested in to this level. The other one being Xenoblade Chronicles 2. So I might actually be getting back into JRPGs on a regular basis again.
I'm probably in the same boat as you. My friend Alex told me last week Persona 5 was on sale for $20, and I've always wanted to bite the bullet because I miss JRPGs. I miss the storytelling. I miss the weirdness and just the complexity of them. So when I picked up Persona 5, I've been playing that game. As of right now, as of this recording, I'm at 70 hours.
Jeez.
In the last week.
Well, no.
I haven't had a game absorb me like that since Mass Effect or Skyrim.
And I'll tell you what, I discovered really quick how passionate the fan base that I'm apparently surrounded by is. when I posted a joke on an exchange I had with a friend of mine on Facebook, we were playing Smash, and he was like, "Oh, so Joker's in Smash?" And I was like, "Yeah, he is." I was like, "Okay, have you noticed that the Inkling girl looks a lot like the character Futaba?" And I was like, "So she does." And then my friend was like, "So do you think Persona fans who don't like Futaba play Smash and beat up on the Inkling girl to get their fill of Futaba abuse?" And I'm like, "Get out of my house!" And I just got mobbed by Futaba lovers. So I was like, "Okay, awesome. All right."
I was "You do not hurt Futaba-chan."
I was like, "This story has apparently caused some distress. Here's some fan art as a peace offering."
Yeah, actually, speaking of fan art, Persona 5 got me so invested. I actually paid an artist on my Facebook to draw me like the chat icons from the phone in that game. For $20, totally worth it. I'm thinking, I'm in Persona now. Ha!
I've cosplayed as Morgana, and my husband has cosplayed as Joker.
That is awesome.
So I guess now the next question I want to ask is, if you had to introduce somebody to your world, or get somebody into your sphere, what would be something that you'd show them? So Skyblaze, let's start with you.
Oh good God, what is my sphere? Narrow it down.
Or spheres, plural. Because as is well established, you are the nerdiest person on this.
Yeah, it is a problem. If we were just going for like straight up sci-fi nerd or like TV and film, I'd probably reach for some of the original Star Trek films. So Star Trek 2, Star Trek 4, Star Trek 6, maybe? I'll probably start with Star Trek 2. Because that is so easy to understand and appreciate and get into, even without knowing anything about the original series. Because the characterization and the writing and the acting and the relationship between the characters is so strong. The fact that it's in space is almost incidental, but not really, because it forms so much of the backdrop about who these people are and what they do.
Okay, all right. Birdman, what about you? If you had to introduce some spheres of nerddom, what would be the gateway drug?
Okay, if I'm gonna do film and then video games here. If you really want to get me, and you really want to get my specific jam, 80s action movies. I'm gonna sit your ass down. We're gonna watch RoboCop, and you're gonna love it. Because I'd buy that for a dollar.
Okay, not interesting choice. Not many go that route.
And I would show them Aliens. Because we're on an express elevator to hell, going down. Believe me, I can quote that movie line for line. In terms of video games, I'm going to show you a little bit of a different jam. Because I want you to express yourself. I'm obviously going to suggest Skyrim, because I love it. But I'm actually going to sit your ass down, and we're going to play Rock Band together. Because I think music is very important to expressing the soul. Being able to sing without fear of judgment, without fear of being made fun of, is a very important expression to really kind of let yourself out, to really just literally, without better phrasing, rock the fuck out. I think that's what I would do. Those are my gateway jams, Skyrim and Rock Band, to really get a feel of who I am. That's literally whenever every podcast I sign off with Live Free or Die Hard. And it wasn't too long after Rock Band came out that I adopted that phrase, not just because I thought the movie was cool, but because that's how Rock Band made me feel. Very free, very artistically free as well. So we're going to watch 80s movies. We're going to sing some karaoke. And we're going to go slay some dragons with big floppy sausages, as you might say.
That's not going away anytime soon.
No, it is not.
All right. Well, I'm gonna actually pull something that I've actually done to people. One of my hard and fast rules in my dating life is that if we're gonna date, you have to like games. That's the one thing that I ask for, is that you like games. And one of the guys who works who works one of my game stores that I go to, he always knows when I've got a new girlfriend who isn't into gaming, because I will come in and I will buy a Game Boy Advance and a copy of one of the Game Boy Advance Pokemon games, because that is always going to be my go to gateway drug. It's like, okay, you think gaming is a waste of time? Okay, here's what I'm going to do. Here's a Game Boy Advance. Here's Pokemon. I just want you to play this for a few hours. And then come back and see if you still feel the same way. And every time, without fail, I've always gotten the girl I was dating into gaming through that. The quickest turnaround was, I think it was like 2 days. I gave her the game, and then 2 days later, I started getting all these texts like, I caught a Dodrio, I caught a Ditto, I caught a Venonat. You know, just this breathless enthusiasm. Like, yeah, I got her. That's my seduction technique, is give them Pokemon. So
it has the advantage of novelty. There is a slight disadvantage when your other half is also involved in gaming, though. If you have a single TV in your household and consoles connected to it, and both of you want to use the console, this ends up with this kind of like standoff, you know, like the good, the bad, and the ugly plays in the background while you like look at the controller and both try and get to it before the other one does.
And so I'm guessing that since the Switch is yours, you have a bit of an, then you could pull out of the dock and lock yourself in the bathroom for 6 hours while you play a Steam World.
Yeah, I buggered off with it when I went to hospital, so you know. Bye, fucker.
Poor Tony's in the other room listening to this, like, what the hell is she saying? What did I do?
He'll find out when he listens to this later. And I will not be sorry.
Okay. Alright, so kind of just to wind things down a bit. Let's kind of re-examine the first question. Is like, you know, what are some of the elements that these gateway properties that we've named that they have in common? Why do we think that they're good gateway properties? And again, kind of examine that question of what elements need to be in a good gateway franchise. So, I think to me, the reason why Pokemon is my go-to first one is free drug when it comes to getting people into gaming, is because it's so simple to pick up and understand. And it does a really good job of explaining itself and how it works. But at the same time, it's also deep enough that if you really stick at it and really pay attention to what you're doing and make an effort to learn about its world and its rules, it's a really deep experience that, you know, can keep you absorbed for hours. So it's one of those things where it's like I think we said it in the Pokemon episode. It's easy to you can learn it in a day, but it takes a lifetime to master. And it's one of those things that you can just. You can have just as much fun just tooling around and messing about as you are actually like power gaming and grinding. And I think that's why it's been so successful, and why it's such a successful gateway drug in gaming, is again, just because of that accessibility, but also the depth that rewards putting effort into the game. If that makes any sense.
It does, but it's also that kind of universal appeal thing. People who want to like examine all the nuance and do the power gaming thing and get the perfect stats can do that. But people who just want to casually play through it and catch some cute critters can do that as well. One of the things about Doctor Who, for example, is that Doctor Who, over its very, very long history, has covered pretty much every single genre in one way or another. So if you want to introduce somebody to Doctor Who, you can say, look, what are you into? Do you like period drama? We have those. Do you like sci-fi? We've got that. If you like cyberpunk, you know, we've got that as well. Horror, we can do that. So there is a lot to choose from. The problem was, Doctor Who has this marked tendency to kind of disappear up its own backside and get too involved in its own lore and its own history. It happened a lot during the 80s, the later 80s run.
See, the Cartmel Master Plan.
Yeah. And the Cartmel Master Plan was brilliant, but you did have to at least have a vague knowledge about the history of the show in order to get the full experience. One of the things they did right with the new series was that they jettisoned a lot of that and kind of left it as implication and, you know, vague references to the side or stuff in the background that wasn't necessary to understand the episode, but would make the ye old fans go, oh, that's cute. So you do have to be building up a world and building a lore is great, but you have to be careful that you don't overdo it and you don't kind of tie yourself into a knot if you're going to create something that has that universal appeal to be a gateway show, game, whatever.
Okay. Birdman, what about you? What makes a good gateway property to you?
Something that allows you to explore at your own pace. And I think that's what I love about Skyrim in particular, is I didn't know about the Thalamar elves. I didn't know about the Awesomer or, you know, the Khajiit. I knew there were orcs, elves, and cat people, and that's all there was. If you want to play the game as a straight dungeon crawler, you can do that. If you want to get involved in the Civil War, you can do that. If you want to just have weird adventures and explore, you can do that. I love a gateway property that allows you to explore at your own pace. If you want to do additional reading and really learn about the universe's depths, it allows you to do it at your own pace, and you're not excluded from any storyline unless specifically it requires that knowledge. That's what I think the beauty of Skyrim. I think its world was designed beautifully in that regard, that the knowledge is there if you want it. You don't have to know it, but if you do know it, then you're in for a real treat, and you'll see how it connects to the other games. But Skyrim is a property that can stand on its own no matter what, I think, because it's a game built on exploration and literally almost endless possibilities.
And something else I think is important, something that encourages you to further explore that sphere of nerddom. See, again, the Sega Genesis classics people getting into retro collecting because of it. You know, it's not enough to just say, well, like, here's what we're about. You gotta give them a taste of, like, but there's so much more beyond this. So, we're kind of running short on time here. So, let me look at the schedule here and see what we're discussing next week. Oh, next week is Avengers Endgame. That's going to be a fun one. Oh, who's got plans to go see that one?
Thursday night at 5:00.
Driving up to Pennsylvania for an IMAX showing. I'm gonna come back blind. Like I'm convinced that seeing this movie in IMAX is gonna, like, opening the Ark of the Covenant. Just my eyes are gonna melt out of my sockets.
I'm hoping to be able to see it, but it's the end of the month, so pay's tight. We'll see.
All right, but that's our discussion topic for next week: Avengers Endgame, and that's gonna be a big one. So yeah, thank you as always for tuning in. What are some gateway franchises that got you into nerddom? Sound off in the comments or in the email. Let's hear from you guys. What makes a good gateway property to you? And with that is all the time that we have for Nerd of the Third Power this week. Thank you as always for tuning in. As always, I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm Sky Blaze.
I'm Mike the Birdman Dog.
Okay.
It's never gonna get old. Thanks, Cat.
I will never understand how a guy as big as you can make that high of one.
you've heard Tony do his Joker laugh, right?
I have not.
Oh boy.
We'll see you next week. Taka, play us out.